Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now, back to America This Week, live on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
This is Tim Reedy joining you with Kerry Weber. We're sitting in, well, I guess I'm sitting in for Father Matt Malone, who is on pilgrimage in the Holy Land. We should mention that if you want to follow their pilgrimage, you can go to our website and click on our new trending bar. We've got Holy Land 2017 up there. So go there for videos, put in your prayer requests, and you can hear from Father Jim Martin. So join. If you can't obviously be there in person, you can join the digital experience. Zach Davis, we want to talk about an article you've brought to the table that's connected to our first guest and the subject she's going to bring up, which is about people who are crossing the border illegally. And the question that we pose to Father Sean Carroll is, why shouldn't people be deported if they're illegal? Maybe you can introduce Father Carroll and what he has to say on this question.
Yeah, so Father Sean Carroll's a Jesuit, and he's the executive director of the Kino Border Initiative, which is just on the Mexican side of the border in Nogales, Mexico. And the idea for this article, as you mentioned, started with a question that I think a lot of people of goodwill have. So, okay, yes, they came here, but what they did was illegal, right? And so why shouldn't they be deported if they broke the law? And so Father Carroll is someone who ministers to people who are actually making this trip and this journey to our country and haven't often making that decision to come here without documentation. And so he kind of reflects on his experience ministering to these people and what their experiences are in the relationship with the law there.
Well, it's a complicated question because, as he points out in this piece, many, many people are crossing the border because they want to be reunited with their family. So that's a fact. You know, somebody comes over here for a job, winds up staying in the United States, and the options that they're facing are either apply for a visa to go the normal route to entering the country legally and potentially not see your family for many, many years, or just cross the border.
Many years. So he points out that according to the U.S. State Department's visa bulletin, the visa applications of unmarried Mexican sons and daughters of U.S. citizens before June 1st, 1996 are still being reviewed.
Right.
So
that's
a generation.
So
it's not a matter of waiting, you know, a couple of weeks or something, and people are impatient.
Or even a year.
There's a real desire to be reunited. And he talks about the idea that laws are, and kind of red tape like this, it keeps people from seeking and finding a dignified way of life, is how he puts it. It's that to be reunited with a family and to be in a situation that is, you know, safe and where one can find work is something that God desires for all of us. So it's not just a matter of legal efforts. It's a matter of really allowing people to kind of seek that dignified life that God wants for us.
Yeah, and Catholic social teaching definitely, you know, teaches us that nations have a right to secure their borders, but it also reminds us that people have a right to migrate if they can't find a dignified life in their country of origin. Or if, you know, then there's such an emphasis on welcoming the stranger, especially someone who's, you know, seeking to be reunited or facing they can't feed their families maybe where they're at.
Well, this might be a good time to bring in our guest, Dr. Cecilia Gonzalez-Andreu, who's a contributing writer for America, we're proud to say, and an associate professor of theological studies at Loyola Marymount University in California. Dr. Gonzalez-Andreu, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kerry, but please call me Cecilia.
All right, will do. Well, you know, you personally have some experience with a little bit of what we're talking about, this desire to migrate somewhere for a better life and to be with family in a sense. Could you talk a little bit about your own experience as a Cuban refugee?
Well, yes. I mean, in my family's case, of course, you know, it was something that was more visible and in many ways more understandable to people because, you know, the Cuban communist government was understood as an enemy, and the repression that was happening was understood as quite dangerous. So that the United States at the time made it a point to welcome Cuban refugees into the United States. But we had to have family here. We had to have family that we could be reunited with. And we did. We had a great aunt who was an American citizen. But the impetus of it was right in life in Cuba was extraordinarily dangerous, very, very difficult. And I had uncles who had been imprisoned, and we lived a very precarious life. And even though I was a small child, I was very aware of that. Now, I say that because really it pales in comparison to the kinds of things that people are fleeing from today. You know, when we think of the Syrian refugees and when we think about what's going on in a lot of parts of Central America, the Castro regime was frightening, but it was not the kind of wholesale violence that a lot of these communities are experiencing. So I think part of the problem that we have in the United States is that we tend to see everything through our own lens, and we really keep ourselves from knowing the pain of the rest of the world. And that's kind of part of why we spend so much time, you know, in our screens, you know, watching TV and doing all kinds of things that distract us rather than be in touch with what the world is feeling. And I think that our Pope is calling us to that all the time. He's like, you know, especially as Catholics, we're a universal church. And so we have to be aware of the suffering that's really all around us and take that into consideration as we think about what our role is in relation to those people.
Right. And that's something that you addressed in an article for us in a way called We Often Ask, Who Is My Neighbor? Why Does the Answer Always Surprise Us? And that is, can be found at americamagazine.org. And it's this question of, we all know we're supposed to sort of love our neighbor, but we tend to want to limit who our neighbors might be.
Right. Yeah, we want to pick and choose. And what I talk about in that article is, and you know, I use Spanish as the way to get at this, is that in Spanish we have three different words for neighbor, and each one of them is more challenging than the other, to the point where you know, it's like, okay, now we're in God territory now, right? Because first it's, you know, it's the neighbor is the one, you know, who lives near you, and you know, and it's part of your neighborhood, and you know, that's the vecino. But then you've got this other, you know, idea of the one who is prójimo, and that's more the one that's near you, but also it connotes that you have a moral obligation toward taking care of them, and it's the word that's used in Scripture all the time, and it means it has taking care of them built into it, which is a gorgeous thing when you think about it. And then, but the last one is really, really challenging, because the word there is semejante, and that means someone who resembles me and who is almost just exactly like me, but a little variation of me. And that's the word for neighbor that really challenges us, right? Because we tend to not realize how contingent our own privilege is, right? That we were born at this particular time, in this particular place, with, as we would say in California, with particular papeles that someone else doesn't have. And that's, none of that is of our own making. It was an accident of history. And so how do we get then to claim this kind of privilege over other people and say, well, they're illegals, throw them out, I get to be here? And for me, it's especially difficult when I hear people who themselves are immigrants say that, because United States law has morphed and changed so often on immigration. I mean, from the point of, you know, completely open borders to then the Exclusion Act, where Chinese were excluded, to the kinds of things that happened with the Japanese during the Second World War, to all kinds of different morphings of who the other is, who the one that I'm not going to say is my neighbor is at this point. Right. And just this kind of amnesia that we seem to have of not acknowledging the fact that this is not written on some stones that Moses brought down from, you know, that mountain saying those people are illegal. No, this is our own construction. And, you know, this part of the United States where I live and where I have made my home since I was a child, it was not, you know, it was not part of that other eastern side of the United States until very recently, and it was a Spanish land. And you just look at our map and you see the names of all our cities, right? San Diego and San Francisco and Nuestra Señora la Reina de Los Angeles, right? So we have this amnesia that this was someone else's land, and that now we think, well, we just get to throw you all out. And no, that's not okay. And
right,
for me,
right.
You know, people will say sometimes, well, you know, you care about this because you're a Latina theologian. And say, no, you know, I hope that I would care about this, whatever kind of theologian I was, because I think it's a basic human rights and Catholic social teaching issue.
Now, you mentioned, of course, and we mentioned earlier, you're a theologian at Loyola Marymount, and you have a piece on one of your mentors in theology in the February 22nd, I went up February 22nd, prophetic theological work can be dangerous business. How do you, what role does your theology play in your more kind of politically engaged activism right now? Like, how does it give it, you know, what lens does it offer that you think is important?
Well, I think being a Christian very, very seriously, and that means for me that I have a model. And my model's name is Jesus of Nazareth. And then the community that came and formed around him and what their way of life and their way of living in the world was. And for me to be a theologian then means that I develop tools and I engage myself in constant discernment of what is the most authentic way to follow Jesus. I don't think you can do theology, at least for me, without actually living the life of a follower of Jesus, because you need to be on the inside to be able to see, okay, this is what this means. You know, so when he says, love your neighbor as yourself, this is what he means. He means you're going to have to take some serious risks here. You're going to have to do some things that make you very uncomfortable and remove you from the kind of quiet life that maybe you wanted to have, but that now you don't get to have since this election. and that's part of it for me. I think theological work is the most important work in terms of us getting politically to what, you know, we call the reign of God. The reign of God is breaking in. That's what Jesus tells us. It's here and not yet. And the way that we get to it is by political action. It doesn't mean that we're going to build it today or that we have all the answers. But we can't just sit back and say, well, you know, that's going to happen up in heaven. At some point, everything will be okay. No, it's got to happen here. And you guys highlighted a little piece from Alex, you know, about that I wrote about in this last issue, you know, that we really, if there's going to be a heaven, we really need to love the earth.
Right. And this is Alejandro Garcia Rivera, a theologian who passed away when he was 59 years old and who was a friend and mentor to you.
Yes, and who we miss very, very much. I've been hearing from a lot of my colleagues around the country that they've seen the piece, and they were just very moved to read about and remember him. His work is important, and I hope that our listeners have a real chance to read about the insights that he gives us on how to engage life more fruitfully.
Sure. And the piece we're discussing is called Prophetic Theological Work Can Be Dangerous Business by Dr. Cecilia Gonzalez-Andrew.
Cecilia, you have a very moving piece that we published at the end of January about, the title is To Love the United States Does Not Mean to Love It Blindly. But it starts with how important it was to you to be treated, to be with hospitality when you entered this country through the Red Cross. Maybe you can talk about that experience and how that's kind of informed your love, but also perhaps your the critique you bring to United States policies.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that most people don't realize that immigrants, whether they are legal or illegal, are probably some of the people that most love this country. they risked their lives and they go through a lot to make it here. And, you know, in my case, you know, being a small child and having been through, you know, what seemed an interminable wait, and, you know, my family had been waiting for our exit for 4 years, during which time my parents were not allowed to hold a job. My father was sent to a labor camp. It was really, really difficult. And to go through this ordeal and have to leave my father behind and everything, and then to arrive in Miami and be greeted by these really kind people that handed me, you know, that memory that I have of being given a little Red Cross box lunch, and opening that up as a child and seeing this, what to me was miraculous food. We had been having very great difficulties obtaining food in Cuba at that point. And it was just so amazing to be able to kind of regain faith in humanity as a child and say, well, you know, the world isn't so bad and horrible all the time. There's good people and there's caring people and there's some safety in the world. And even though, you know, our life was very difficult, I remember, you know, that we would get these boxes that were surplus food from the army. So I never even knew that there was something that was not powder scrambled eggs for many years, because that was when, you know, we got powder scrambled eggs and peanut butter and like some surplus cheese and things like that. And my mother would make up food from these things. And then, you know, having to go to school and learn a brand new language and the kindness of the teachers, as I talked about in that piece, you know, who never made you feel less because you were struggling, because they realized, boy, you know, you're a child and you're learning a brand new language. This is kind of hard stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and then the other kids who, you know, would invite me over and, you know, give me my first taste of American food. All of these things, you know, being welcomed into a community, that's really, really crucial. And here in Los Angeles, of course, we live in the midst of that happening every single day, right? So we have families here that were here way before the border crossed them. And that are the original settlers of this land.
Sure, and it strikes me that perhaps there is a contrast as well, that if such love and care for people entering the country could influence them to love it, that something like a ban, like the original ban on Muslim nations, folks entering the country, could also influence people in a bad way, which is the opposite of what something like that is allegedly attempting to do.
Absolutely, and it does make us more vulnerable, I think, to anger and to the hatred of others in other parts of the world, and to pointing out, because I remember as a child, you know, we were told the United States is a monstrous place, that they're imperialists, you know, I mean, this is, you know, the communist conversation, right? They're out to get all of us. You have to hate them, right? And really, honestly, if they had acted in the way that we're acting right now, that would have just made Castro's point very well, right? But that's not the way they acted. And so I think if we want to say we are the United States with our beautiful Statue of Liberty on our harbor and these amazing ideals, then I, you know, like I write in my piece, I mean, I love American history and I really studied my civics, and I thought this was really a coherent and beautiful way to live life. And if we, in the name of preserving our country, undo what this country is about, what are we preserving?
Mm-hmm. Something that was a surprise to me. I have a friend who is an undocumented immigrant, and I had no idea what his documentation status was until he kind of went very public about his status in an online video. And something that he pointed out to me was that, you know, if there's 11 million people who are undocumented in this country who have been here, these people are already your neighbor. So in addition to mm-hmm. welcoming the stranger, the someone who is going to come become your neighbor, we've got, what is our obligation to the people who maybe have this invisible documentation status? What's our obligation to them who might already be in our communities?
Right. And you know, they're going to school with our children, and there are co-workers often, and they're certainly all around us. And they're, and in many cases, like probably your friend, Zach, they've been here their entire lives. I mean, I have students who were brought here when they were less than 2 months old, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, right. So this is the only world they know.
The absolutely only world they know, and a world that they love and that they have invested their lives to being a part of. And, you know, when we, and I'm part of an admissions committee that reviews applications from these young people to our university, and when I read their stories, you know, the extraordinary resilience of these young people to make it to a university, because they have to make it on the same merits as every single other student, right? Their grades have to be perfect, all of the things, you know, their extracurriculars, everything. And then to read those stories and to realize what kind of young people they are. They are the best of the best. They're the kind of people that we want in this country to be able to really be innovative and be strong and resilient and move ourselves into ever better and more beautifully flourishing spaces as a community. So why would we want to turn our backs or turn away people who have been contributing so much to our communal lives? I mean, in California, if we deported all of our brothers and sisters who, for no fault of their own, but because of the faults of just the contingencies of history, do not have the proper documents, I mean, our economy would just collapse. And is that something we are prepared to do in the name of, quote, law and order, to have our economies just collapse?
Now, you mentioned, you wrote about this actually shortly after the election, students at your university, Loyola Marymount, and what they were feeling. Do you find that your students are becoming more politically engaged over the last, say, 6 months?
Oh, yes. I mean, in my classroom, the kinds of conversations that we were having about Catholic social teaching, about Christ, now they have this urgency that they've never had before. And I am very excited about that, because I see our young people now putting together, okay, these are the demands of the gospel, and this is how you live them out now. And so we do have, I see, a great increase, not only in the engagement in the classroom, but in their engagement all around in what is happening and in their willingness to extend themselves for their friends, which, of course, is the whole definition of Christian love.
What would you say to someone who has, good intentions, says something along the lines of, you know, I think we just need to take care of the home team first, you know, you make sure our families and our communities are getting jobs, and sort of looking at it through that lens?
Well, it's not a zero-sum game, that's what I would say. I would say, what does it take away from us and from our, quote, home team, that we have others among us who also want to contribute from their part of it, right? It's the idea of there's only one pie, and we have to just divide it into so many parts, and there's not enough for you, rather than how about we bake more pies together? And that's just, you know, that's going to be a lot better. And I think we just need a realistic, and not just in the United States, but in the rest of the world, we need to realistically think about how, as the people of the earth, you know, hurtling through space in this spaceship Earth that we're on, how we work together to make this planet work better for all of us. And if we did that, if we said, you know, hey, you guys are really good at this thing, how about you guys do this? And you guys are very good at this thing, how about you guys do that? Instead of the insane competitions that we're involved in, which always lead to war and greed and everything, I mean, if we just saw things differently, I think that we could solve a lot of these problems. So rather than seeing, you know, the undocumented person as someone who has broken a law that we arbitrarily made recently to try to get people to break them, if instead of seeing that, we see, okay, what is it that we need to do together? We need to develop economies. We need to develop educational systems. We need, what is it that we need to do together? And for me, that's the greatest disappointment of this administration, is that since the campaign and through the election, it has all been about dividing. And for people like me that come from having experiences of autocratic and dictatorships and totalitarianism, this is very frightening, because that's what happens in totalitarian regimes. People are divided into us and them, so that then the totalitarian government and the great leader can claim to save from all of this chaos that is going on, where the chaos has really been invented. Undocumented immigrants have no higher incidence at all of crime, not at all. That's non-existent. They're not going through the borders by droves. As a matter of fact, you know, Mexican migration recently has been actually at a standstill. We don't have any economic problems because of them. As a matter of fact, we often don't have enough people to fill the kinds of jobs that they do, especially in agriculture. So this crisis is all manufactured. And why has it been manufactured? And I think that's a question we need to ask. What is at the end game here? I don't think it's so much about the immigrants as that it's the immigrants are a scapegoat. And we've seen that in history, repeated over and over again in all parts of the world, to demonize a group of people so that then you can take control. And that's what scares me.
So what aspect of our, I'm sure there are many, of our Catholic faith can help sort of unite us in this effort to help support families who might be separated, to help support people who are in need, but also to help bring together folks on different sides of this issue?
Well, I think that the first thing is to just deal with what is real, right? So if we're in different sides of the issue, let's just talk about reality. Let's talk about, rather than this, you know, all of this frightening kind of rhetoric, let's say, okay, let's be truthful, and let's talk about what does it take away from you? How does it hurt you? You know, like when we hear conversations about, well, we're going to bring all the manufacturing jobs back, I just keep thinking, okay, who are you going to get to actually work in those factories, right? Those are practical questions. And so we can talk about the real, the practical, and then we need to talk about structures, and we need to say as Catholics, right, as Christians, which of these structures that we have set up and in many ways made idols are really turning out to be oppressing people and keeping them in poverty.
Right.
And that's a conversation we need to have, right?
Now, we're almost at the end of the show, Cecilia, but quickly, I wondered if you could sort of talk about how we look at these immigration laws in relation to other laws. So some folks might say, you know, we're focusing a lot on the immigration laws, but they're part of a larger set of laws that we need to enforce. How would you talk about it in that context?
Well, I would go back to Martin Luther King's beautiful letter and from Birmingham jail and say that, you know, and he bases himself on St. Thomas Aquinas and on St. Augustine, saying, you know, that a law that harms other human beings is no law at all. And that we do have a higher law that we have to follow as Catholic Christians. And that higher law makes a very risky demand of us, and it is to have this love of neighbor. So we have to say, just because something is legal doesn't mean it's right. And we need to work to change the laws. We need to work to create comprehensive immigration reform that will make everyone's life better, that will help all of our communities flourish together. So I don't think we can make idols of laws. I think laws are very dangerous idols. So I think we need to engage them critically, and then we need to think of new ones that will help everyone.
Well, thank you so much, Cecilia. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and we're really grateful for your time here on the show today.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
So for folks who are interested in reading more of Cecilia's work, they can go to americamagazine.org to read many of her wonderful articles on our website. And don't forget to listen for Jesuitical, the America Magazine podcast by the young editors of America.
Yes.
Not me and Tim, Zach and others. We invite you to subscribe to America by calling 1-800-627-9533. You can also follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter. Again, 1-800-627-9533. For Carrie Weber, Tim Reedy, and Zach Davis, we wish you all a good day and a blessed Lent.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM. And tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.